Welcome to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant. The Legacy and Faith Show is about the journey of discovering how to create plans that protect wealth and family values for generations. And now the host of the Legacy and Faith Show, Paul Grant.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, it is another edition of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant. Hi there, Paul.
Hi, Mark.
Good to see you once again.
Thank you.
You are an attorney and a tax attorney.
Yeah.
You're talking about the power of attorneys today.
You're right, exactly.
Not that
yes.
kind of power of attorney. Yeah. We're talking about the document.
No, that was a nice little lead in there. Good job.
But yeah, you've talked about this in previous shows, but kind of a refresher course on power of attorney issues and particularly the financial power of attorney that we need in our estate planning.
Yeah, it's been quite some time since I've touched this issue, so I thought it was a good one to bring back to the table. And really what it is it's a reminder, hopefully, to the listeners of what we need to be doing in estate planning and that we should be thinking about estate planning. It's not a one-and-done issue. It's not something to where you get a document and now that document is going to rescue the day. It's really about, is that specific document, is the financial power of attorney, which we're going to be talking about today, is that up to date? Is it ready to work if you need it to work? And many people have an intuitive nature about a financial power of attorney, but it may not really grasp or get the details of it and why it's so important and why it is so important to keep up to date. This is one of the documents that really does create the 3-year cycle in my firm, is this document specifically. Hmm. So if this document has laid out the course of action for my entire firm, then it might be a pretty important document. Now, we talk about trusts all the time, right? And so typically I'm talking about trusts and the power of trusts. I talk about the difference between a will and a trust, why most people would be advantaged by a trust. But actually, one of the biggest decisions that I've made in my law firm is to have a relationship program and have a 3-year cycle of getting every document reprinted and put back up to date. And what drove that decision was this document, the financial power of attorney. And the reason that is because I went to multiple banks, probably 25 different banks in the North Seattle area. And I sat down with managers and I talked to them and I said, from a financial perspective, because most of us, probably all of us have a bank account. So if we needed to use a financial power of attorney, it would be really good if we could use the bank account. So I went to banks and said, what is the oldest power of attorney that you would like to see? In other words, when does this document start to be questioned by banks? And almost every single one of those 24 places came up with the same exact answer, which is 3 years.
Really?
And so, therefore—
So if it's older than 3 years, then they don't honor it or something?
It's honored, but now it is questioned. Mm-hmm. Now it is suspicious. Now old law is there. Now it begins to look and— The bank is wondering, did another power of attorney get input? Mm. Is this fresh enough? Does it still reflect the intent of the creator? So the longer we have a financial power of attorney, then the further away from that decision-making process we get. And then the financial institutions that need to use that financial power of attorney question, is the same person really the same person that is trusted? Is there another one that intervened and someone is trying to use an older one? And so they can make us jump through hoops before they honor the financial power of attorney. So wouldn't it be so much better if we had things that were updated, ready to be used? Because here's the deal. So far, I don't know the day that I'm going to die or become incapacitated. It's not on my calendar. And for most of us, it is an unknown factor. It is the great roll of the dice. When I came in here, I was being a little bit tongue in cheek, but you said, how you doing? I said, well, I woke up today. I got out of bed. It's a good day to start. Right. That is as much I have a very busy schedule today, but truly, I don't know if I get that privilege tomorrow. I genuinely don't. I my schedule says I do. Right. My expectation says I do. But I don't know what I don't know about tomorrow. And so if I wait too long and I, all of a sudden I need to use these estate planning documents, then what? If they're outdated, if they've been around too long, are they truly reflecting my genuine desire today? Hmm. And I've said this before, which is none of us really get up expecting to have a health incident today or to die today. And so therefore, because that's not our expectation, we need to be prepared because I just don't know the day. And so we need to talk about this critical instrument and why it has influenced my firm to this type of degree.
Well, what's the basic premise then of a financial power of attorney document? What does it accomplish? What does it do?
Yeah. So the financial power of attorney, again, a more intuitive document, but what it is doing is it is giving your power to someone else to make financial decisions on your behalf. And really what it in most financial power of attorneys, actually in every single one that I've ever reviewed, and I try not to exaggerate. I try to use my words very carefully. And so if I say every single document that I have reviewed, I actually mean that with integrity. So every financial power of attorney that I have ever reviewed, what it accomplishes is it opens up the coffers to someone else. So as a starting premise, I'm married. So my financial power of attorney might say to my wife, Mariana, even though we may have things jointly, even though we have things together, I still would want to give her full authority over anything that's in my name. And so therefore, I may say to my wife, I give her immediate power to come in and operate as I operate. And that's what the financial power of attorney is doing, is that if I need to use it or if someone else needs to use it because I can't manage my own funds, then they have the full authority to act as if I am acting. And if she were to go to the bank and I had a bank account that was just in my name, and many individuals, even with first marriages, even with long-standing marriages, there's plenty of
That's
people
the
out there that yeah. have mm-hmm. a bank account just in their name. Mm-hmm. And it may have just been one of these things that you opened it up on a whim because there was some interest rate or something else and your spouse wasn't with you. Whatever the circumstance may have been, you have a bank account that's just in your name. So what if you have a health incident and we needed access to that account? Well, we would want a financial power of attorney given to a spouse so that they could go and operate that account as themselves. In addition, what if my wife and I were in a together accident, neither of us could act on ourselves, then I need to have a backup to my spouse. Or if I'm single, I need to have a several people deep of backups of who do I implicitly trust with my finances? Who do I implicitly trust will act in my best interest, not steal from me? Because what the financial power of attorney is doing, which, by the way, I have a mild objection to, which is why I like trust better than I like financial power of attorneys. But what the financial power of attorney is doing is it's simply opening up the account to be accessible. But it is not giving detailed information on how to use those funds. So therefore, we default to law. And Washington law, like most other states, would say you have to act in the best interest of the person that you're representing. You have a duty of good faith. You have a duty of loyalty to that individual. And those two combined duties then should guide that someone isn't going to steal from you, that they're not going to spend their money on themselves or buy elaborate things that are not for you. Rather, they'll be focused on you and you alone, but that's all it does. It doesn't set up how I spend my money or how I want my money spent by that individual. So there's lack of instructions.
You implied a trust or a financial power of attorney. I always thought it was just part of the trust or the will. But you're saying it makes it sound like this is a separate standalone document that is very powerful.
Yes, it is. As a matter of fact, everyone needs a financial power of attorney, whether you have a will document as a design for your estate plan or whether you utilize a trust instrument as the design of your estate. So everyone needs a financial power of attorney because it governs anything that is in your name. So it governs everything, which is and that kind of actually leads into one of our next questions, which is why does someone need it? Because we have so many different assets and our name is typically on multiple different items. Mm-hmm. So not only a bank account, not just an investment account, not just a 401k, not just a house, but also our bills. So most people have a credit card. What if I am unable to make a financial decision because I have a health incident? So and by the way, a financial power of attorney is only used during your lifetime. So in this discussion, the financial power of attorney is a document that if I can't make financial decisions for myself, someone else needs to make them, but I'm alive. As a matter of fact, a financial power of attorney ends on the day that I die. Okay. So it is ineffective from the day I die forward.
Okay.
Now, there's a couple things that we can put in there that continue, but there's only a few items, such as the power to deal with my body should I die. So do I get cremated? Do I use a funeral home? What do I do with my body? So there's certain things that we can put in there that will continue forward. But most things, actually almost every other thing, end on the date of death. And it becomes virtually a useless instrument. Actually, off the top of my head, that's about the only thing that is in a financial power of attorney that can continue forward that would be recognized. Hmm. So other than that, this document is only used during your lifetime should you need assistance. Mm-hmm. So, but I was saying we have credit cards as an example. So if I cannot manage my own money and I need information about a credit card bill that is coming in the mail, or rather my agent, an agent is the term for a financial power of attorney of the one who steps in to take your place. How do they contact or how will they be given authority to talk to a credit card company? Have you ever tried to call a credit card company on someone else's behalf?
Right.
They stop you.
Right.
They want all these security questions. They want an in-depth dive. Well, the solution is if we need to cancel the credit card, if we need payment information, then the solution is we've got to send in the financial power of attorney in order to deal with the credit card, in order to cancel the credit card. Mm-hmm. Utilities. Have you ever tried to contact Comcast if you're not on it? It's a wretch. I mean, it's right. It's like worse than the federal government. Yeah. I mean, good Lord, it's just TV. Come on, people. Mm-hmm. But utilities are horrible and they make you jump through multiple hoops. What's the solution? A financial power of attorney. So if I needed to move to a different facility and I'm no longer using my cable, my credit card needs to be canceled, all of a sudden the person who is going to help me cannot operate in my name without this critical document. So it's more than just financial assets. It's also dealing with all the practical things in our life as well.
Discussing the financial power of attorney today on the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant. If you want to find out more about his services, how do people get in touch with you, Paul?
Head over to my website, legacyandfaith.com. There's upcoming educational opportunities, ways to communicate with us, and all these past podcasts all found at legacyandfaith.com.
Okay, back with more of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant in just a moment.
Can I avoid probate? Will I lose everything if my health becomes compromised? How do I preserve what I have for me and my family? Will the government take it all? This is Paul Grant with the Legacy and Faith Show. These are some of the most common questions we get on a daily basis, and there are solutions for all of these issues. It is time for you to protect your family and what God has placed under your stewardship, and we can help. Go to legacyandfaith.com to find out more about our services and upcoming educational opportunities. That's legacyandfaith.com.
Your photos, slides, scrapbooks, and home movies are invaluable and irreplaceable. Barry Kenny here with the Bear Services. Call us to save them as digital files to be stored electronically and shared liberally. We will even come to you so they stay in your possession. Go to thebearservices.com for more information. That's thebearservices.com.
We now return to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant, and continue today's practical discussion to apply biblical principles for kingdom purposes.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, discussing with Paul today the ideas behind a financial power of eternity.
Eternity. That's not bad for the Legacy and Faith Show, is it?
Yeah.
And what I usually talk about.
Well, we found out in the first segment, though, it is only for when you're alive.
That's right. It's not for eternity.
But you become incapacitated, a health issue. It's so that people can make financial decisions on your behalf. And I asked a question during the break there. Well, then does this allow that person to bypass all the stupid passwords and all
right.
that stuff, that all of our online stuff now requires a password? And
yeah.
who can track those things down, including the person who's, well, they're still alive?
Boy, that's even that's probably a show in and of itself. And the problem is I don't have a ton of knowledge with that specific issue. That is becoming so specific, and it's more about individuals who deal in that world of passwords and online accounts. To be honest, estate planners have very little answers toward that other than what the law says. And the law says if you use someone else's password for any purpose, not only is it a federal felony, but it's a state felony. Mm. So stop using other people's passwords.
So that's why Netflix put the kibosh on that.
Well, no, that's just to make money.
Right.
So yes, inside a financial power of attorney, there should be a authority given over all items that are personal in nature, and passwords would be one of them. Mm-hmm. So the question is, if you haven't updated your financial power of attorney, because I've talked about updating this document, and it's more not for you, but it's for the agent. Do you want their experience to be difficult, or do you want it to be as smooth as possible? So this isn't about you. This is about making sure everything is done to ensure that if it's ever needed, your agent, who's already stopping part of their life, already stepping in to assist you, already pulling their hair out, already at stress levels and emotional stress levels. Usually it's an adult child or someone who knows us well, and they're emotionally grappling with your health difficulties. And now we're going to throw on, and oh, by the way, can you manage all my finances in the world and all my personal stuff in the world? So if we don't have a strong financial power of attorney, we're setting them up for a difficult experience, or a more difficult experience than what should have been. So the solution is make sure that these documents are updated. It's not always just about legal changes, but it's also about ensuring that the document is going to operate and be received. That's a better way to talk about it, that it will be received by the institution that we are trying to deal with. So language should include things like what you're talking about, Mark, which is electronic accounts and virtual accounts, virtual assets. All of that is a very, very tricky area of law,
Yeah. But
that needs to be included. I talked about the necessity to add in financial institutions, so bank accounts, IRAs. Hmm. That's one of the big assets. As a matter of fact, if we have a revocable living trust, one of the primary reasons we still need a financial power of attorney is because we don't put an IRA in the name of the trust. It must stay in your personal name. So if something is in your personal name, then the financial power of attorney is the document that will manage that. And if someone has a IRA, that is reasonably substantial, then we want to make sure the financial power of attorney is very well written, not just to open up the coffers, but to give direction with how to use that money. Hmm. So it's more than just opening it up. Wouldn't it be great if our agent knew how to use that money instead of only having access to it? So not only do we need the electronic information, we need account financial information, but we also need things such as, what if I am not doing well because I was in an accident? What if I'm sued, or what if we need to sue somebody? Are there legal powers to bring a lawsuit in there? We sign a tax return every year. So is there a tax clause that allows the agent to deal with the IRS on your behalf? Hmm. What about Medicaid? What if a client doesn't have as much money and all of a sudden they have a health incident and they're spending their money much faster? Would we want opportunities and powers to create instruments to protect that money through Medicaid protection instruments? So the list goes on and on to what needs to be in a financial power of attorney in order for it to really work properly.
Well, again, elaborate a little bit more. How does the financial power of attorney work when you have a trust? Do you still need one if you have a trust? Again, I'm still kind of wondering how these two work together. Does one negate the other?
So anyone who has a revocable living trust absolutely needs a financial power of attorney. So everybody needs a financial power of attorney. If you're over the age of 18, you need a financial power of attorney. Why? Because, boy, nowadays, younger people are having more emotional difficulties and they're having – so therefore, what if they don't pay their bills? So with a trust, though, it operates differently. Most assets, the biggest exclusion is your 401k, your IRA, your Roth IRA. So any tax-deferred account must stay in your personal name. That asset is ran by the financial power of attorney, like I said. Okay. All other assets, your house, your bank accounts, your investment accounts, life insurance policies, businesses, all these other assets that we own, when a trust is developed properly, should be in the name of the trust. And then the trust instructions will guide the successor trustee to make decisions over those specific assets. But the financial power of attorney is still managing. Oftentimes, the biggest asset for some people other than a house is their tax-deferred accounts, their IRAs and stuff. So we got to manage that. But plus, everything else that I've mentioned – credit cards, utilities, signing a tax return, having the ability to shift money or to shift wealth to ensure that Medicaid is not necessary, or for taxing purposes, if someone has a very reasonable amount of money, we may need to shift wealth. And so the financial power of attorney is still going to manage everything that is in your name. Vehicles is another one. So personally, I don't have vehicles go into a trust unless you're single and have no kids. Other than that, they stay in the person's name. Mm. So what if I have a vehicle, I need assistance, and I can't manage my own life, and we got to sell the vehicle, or we need to transfer it to a child or whatever else, then that financial power of attorney is going to step in to do the job. It's not going to be my trust instrument. Mm. So these two work together. Now, typically, what I would do in my firm is I'd have that be the same person. So the successor trustee managing all the trust assets would be the financial power of attorney as well. So this person would wear two different hats. They would wear two different titles, but in essence, one person is still managing all the assets. It's just, what document do they need to use when we have a trust instrument? They need to know, if are they acting in their successor trustee power, or are they acting in their financial power of attorney? So two different hats, but that covers an individual with a large blanket to ensure that everything that they need is going to be taken care of should they ever experience a health issue or an incapacitation. And that's really what all of this planning is trying to do. All of this planning, the first thing that I tell clients is my job is to protect you first. That's number one. What do you as a client need in order to be financially taken care of? Then when a client passes away, then we can start turning our attention to the family and to those that we leave behind. But the first question is, how do I protect my clients? And we protect them by having really good estate planning documents in place and having a relationship, some type of a relationship process that will continually allow us to update their trust and their financial power of attorneys, because these documents are critical in ensuring that if they ever experience a need for someone to step alongside of them and help them in life, that these documents are ready, that they're at their highest best use, and therefore it creates a easy transition for the one who is stepping in to help you. Let's not make a mess for them. Let's not make it more difficult. It's already difficult enough. Get these updated, and your agent, the person who is going to help you, is going to have a much, much easier time in that process.
Okay. The process of estate planning, very important, and all of these documents, making sure they're up to date. And if you like the way Paul thinks on this subject, you want to find out more about his services, how do people get in touch with you, Paul?
Well, we'd love to hear from you. Go over to legacyandfaith.com. There's ways to communicate with us found there. Past podcasts, upcoming educational opportunities, and it's all found at legacyandfaith.com.
It's the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant.
Thank you for joining us for the Legacy and Faith Show. You can find more information about the show and Paul Grant at legacyandfaith.com. Join us next week at the same time as we learn to build God's kingdom and continue our journey on how to protect wealth and family values for generations. All discussions on the Legacy and Faith Show are intended to be about general legal issues. If a situation applies to you, then we encourage you to seek specific legal advice. Please do not rely upon any discussions from this program in place of having a personal relationship with your attorney. Any listener question that may have been answered also does not constitute legal advice and does not establish a client-attorney relationship.